Debbie?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, hi everyone. My name is Julia Callahan with Rare Bird Lit. I'm here with Debbie Cloyd, the author of The Summer We Came to Life. Debbie, do you want to talk maybe a little bit first about just the general, give everyone a general overview of the plot of the book? What happens?
Sure.
Just real quick.
My pleasure. Okay, The Summer We Came to Life is about three best friends dealing with the death of their fourth musketeer. And they go on a vacation to Honduras to deal with the loss and to move on. And you have two generations. You have the girls and their parents. And the parents kind of tell their stories about the Iran Revolution, about civil rights, about Panama, and all these heady days from the 60s and 70s. To help the younger generation make some big decisions. And then there's a twist, a supernatural quantum physics twist.
Okay, but we won't give that away. So when I was reading the book, I was really struck by the sort of depths of the loss. And obviously, I mean, being... you and I are approximately the same age, which is not that old. So I was struck by the depth of the loss of a best friend, especially at that young age. Do you have experience with that, or how did you sort of go about creating that loss and the way that those characters feel that loss so acutely?
I have dealt with loss in different capacities. Grandparents and other relatives and friends more distant than that committed suicide. So I definitely have, unfortunately, been witness to some of that personal sense of loss. However, the impetus for the book really came from two other things. It came from a near-death experience that I had, too, actually, terribly enough, drowning experiences. And also because I have a best friend like that in the book that is really so much more, that is more like family, that you cannot imagine how you could live without them anymore. So those kind of combined into exploring loss.
Right. And you know, what I sort of felt and what I took from it, I had had a conversation actually last week with a friend about the loss of a best friend at such a young age and how really all you can think of is all the things in your life that they're not going to be there for. And I really felt that the characters who had lost this best friend just, I mean, I don't even think it's ever explicitly said, but just how much they felt that future loss, as much as they felt the loss right then, but just the future of not having this person around.
Yeah, no, that's a really poignant way of putting it. Yeah, I think you do see that with the main character. She's kind of experiencing guilt that she gets to go on, and then also, yeah, that sense of sadness that she's going to have all these experiences and that they planned on having together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was a very well executed part of the book. Okay, so let's talk travel, because if the audience doesn't know, Deborah was with her best friend that she mentioned was on The Amazing Race and is a big traveler. So let's talk travel and let's talk why Honduras, why the French boyfriend. There's a lot of elements of travel in the book. So why those particular places, but also where, I mean, you know, are these places that are important to you? Are they, you know, let's talk
sure.
about that.
Okay. Yeah, travel in general is something that's important to me. So I'm a big advocate of people, of Americans, especially kind of getting out there and seeing the world.
Right.
I know that it's been so formative in my life. I kind of started traveling after I grew up in Virginia, so I was very stationary for the first 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I caught the travel bug after I quit a DC marketing, very serious job downtown, and took off for Thailand for 6 months. And I kind of never stopped after that. I would come back and forth to LA and different places, but I've lived kind of all over, either as a photographer or as a travel writer, or just kind of you know, living in different places. I've been in Barcelona, I was in Paris and London and different parts of Central America, Honduras, Kenya. So I've kind of bounced around a lot. Honduras was a very magical time in my life. Like I went there to live with a best friend, with another best friend who's a photographer, and it was just the Latin way of life, everything that I love about it. You know, a lot of music and laughter and family, big dinners, big parties. I was kind of, people picture Honduras a certain way, but there, the people that I knew were very well connected. They were all Western educated. They were kind of all the business owners and the, so we lived the life, basically. We went to vacation homes every weekend, and we spent time with all the politicians and the socialites and the artist community. So it was just a really rich time. It was also, however, a time in my life when I was making a lot of big decisions. I was turning 30, just like the main character. I had to kind of figure out, okay, it's been a blast. I've had a lot of fun, but what am I going to do next? So wrestling with these kind of issues. And then when I, after Honduras, I went to Kenya, and then I went back home. I went to my parents' house in Northern Virginia outside D.C. to sit down and write a book. And it seemed very natural to set it in Honduras at that point, because that was what I associated with all those kind of big questions for me.
Yeah. Well, and I find it interesting that you talk about Honduras being very family-oriented, and in a way this big sort of, I mean, they're not, most of them are not actually related, but this big sort of makeshift family is having their, I guess, a sort of reunion there after this trauma and this tragedy has happened to them in the
right.
book.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, that's another theme in the book, is the idea of, I think in the book, it's called unlikely family. So it's kind of how in our society that has become kind of fractured, and there's a lot of divorce, and there's a lot of missing figures and people scattered all over and move apart and so forth. The idea of family is kind of changing. And so, you know, I have my best friend, Bianca, and the one we've talked about. You know, I don't remember life before her, and certainly she's more like family than anything else. And her mother is like my mother, you know, so we've kind of expanded into these new notions of what it means to be family. That's a big part of it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I like this sort of, I mean, I personally have a mother who takes on other children, in any sort of real sense, but sort of any of my friends who maybe comes from that sort of fractured family, my mother, you know, makeshift adopts them, you know, and so that was something that I really got. A sense that I really got out of the book was this sort of these other mothers taking on the girls that didn't maybe have that, and the very true nature of that's still truly family, even though
right.
it's not
mm-hmm.
biological, it's not blood. Who cares? It's still, you know, still very much
right.
so family. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, I like that. Yeah. I mean, that's the sense of like who we become, basically, right? I mean, how we separate ourselves from the people that raised us and tried to instill us with the right morals and the right character, and, you know, and lots of people have done that throughout our lives.
Right.
But yeah, there are certain people that are your family.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And you know, I thought that was one of the strong points of the book as well, that, you know, this sort of, I mean, I kind of almost want to call it a post-Friends urban family kind of scenario where, you know, where you create your own. You just create what you need. And I thought that was really well executed in the book. The other thing that I wanted to talk about was the sort of, and let's not give away the big twist, but the sort of, like, I guess, metaphysical element to it. I found it really interesting, especially in the beginning of the book, when there's a diary that plays a large part in the book that was shared written in by both the girl who is now dead but was dying and the main
right.
character. And in that, they talk a lot about metaphysics and very theoretically about metaphysics. And what struck me was that you must have done a lot of research on that because it seemed like you were quoting actual things. So maybe you could talk a little bit about what went into creating that whole world, you know, that whole discussion on metaphysics.
Right.
Yeah. And we can,
sure.
without,
yeah,
like I said,
I was,
without giving away the big reveal, we
yeah.
can talk a little bit about what they actually are talking about.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
It's all definitely very true theories. So the premise, like you said, is that the girls, before Mina died, you know, she was sick, and so they knew it was coming, and they were playing with the idea, or desperately trying to find a way to communicate after death. And
right.
so they were researching all this stuff, and kind of Mina was looking into the more, you know, supernatural occult stuff, and while Samantha, she's a physics graduate, she's doing the more hard science stuff. And me, I've just always been very, very fascinated by physics. I have an uncle who's an astrophysicist at Cornell. I've always enjoyed kind of talking with him. And in college for a little while, I thought that I would double major, but unfortunately my math skills are not exactly, you know, what you would
enough.
Want
yeah.
to excel at that. Yeah. So I've kind of just decided on a life of you know, the layman's study. So I read all the journals, and I get all my, you know, subscriptions to all the magazines, and I love all the books like Brian Greene and Stephen Hawking and all these kind of authors that have made themselves accessible to, you know, layman kind of reading public. So I've really been fascinated. I love black holes. I love parallel worlds. I love all this kind of far out, almost sci-fi stuff that's based in, you know, mathematical theory. But when it came to the book, it was really, like I said, after I had this kind of life-changing experience, drowning, then I started thinking about, okay, so what is this physics stuff? I always thought of it as like sci-fi, like it was just fun, you know, but then after that I was like, well, what does it really have to say about these big mysteries in life, about death and about dying and mourning and that our people that are, you know, that are gone. And so I started researching that, like how these different theories, if anyone's kind of used it to, and of course it's the ages old battle between science and religion, so there's lots of stuff out there. But in reality, a lot of scientists, I mean, literally for afterlife and death and stuff. So I just started kind of playing with the different theories. And I can get as specific as you want. There's two main ones that are in the book. It's
sure.
called the Copenhagen Theory and the Mini World Theory. And the basic idea is quantum physics on a very weird, you know, submolecular, very subatomic level. There's all these choices that get made to exist, not exist. Like it's a mathematical probability wave, so it's kind of hard to describe in words. But basically, these choices, and they don't know exactly what happens, why the world becomes one way or the other. And so there are different theories that address that. And one says that it's human consciousness that makes the world come into being. And that's kind of a very powerful idea. And it's been picked up by things like The Secret and all these kind of new age, you know, Deepak Chopra kind of books on self-help and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it really is based in mathematics. So that's one theory. However, scientists weren't really happy with that theory because it puts a lot of responsibility and, what would they say, like special treatment towards the human consciousness, which we are pretty small in the larger billions of, you know, eons of time. So they started coming up with another explanation. So mini world theory literally says that every time there's a choice between an atom being in one place or another or a molecule, that is actually splitting into an infinite of possibilities, to every possibility. But then when you try to relate that to a macro, you know, thing like a human being, it's of course a little crazy.
Right.
So I basically combined those two theories in the book, which is theoretically impossible, by the way. So I'm going to meet with just had lunch with this physicist, and we're going to have, like, hopefully a debate about, you know, that can explain better about why they're incompatible. But it's a neat idea. So now, without spoiling it, basically they see how in the book Samantha and Amina are trying to figure out how to combine these two theories to communicate after that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what struck me about it too was how devoted Samantha was to the scientific part of it, and how devoted Mina was to. I mean, she sort of let her have her science, mm-hmm. in a way, but then also kind of was like, well, this might not be true. And, you know, I found her much less like, much like, okay, yeah, you know, find it, but, you know, I'm going to tell you really what it's all about. There was a passage in particular that I'm referring to that struck me where she was talking about how it's all about love. Mina was in the diary. And so I thought that was very interesting, as the one who sort of lives is the one who's clinging so fiercely to this notion of science, where the one who's dying is kind of lets it go and is,
right.
is like, yeah. And that sort of very earthly, for lack of a better word, science, just kind of stops meaning anything, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Mina is really the heart of the book, you know, and she's that part of me that that after I, you know, experienced this near-death thing, you kind of realize that there's bigger things out there, you know, like that science is tapping at one bit at a time, but that there are concepts that are kind of beyond all of it, and those are things like love and light, and some of that's in the book too, about maybe they're all the same thing, you know, maybe eternity and time and light and space, it's a difficult thing to put into words, but I think you hit it right on the nose, but yeah, you see the two of them representing these two different sides of it, and Mina's kind of the more mystical, she's kind of seen into the other side more, and saying, while Sam is, of course, trying to cling to something she can hold on to in life, you know.
Right, and it seems to be logical that if you were the one living, you would want to hold on to the science of it and the certainty of it, you know, rather than rather than having to sort of jump in and have faith.
That, right. Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you know, sort of to segue here, I would say that one thing that interested me was the role of faith and the role of spirituality without being religious. You know what I'm
right.
saying? Like there's a lot of faith and there's a lot of spirituality, but there's not much real religion, which, I mean, first of all, for the being in Honduras, I thought was interesting. I mean, I have never been to Honduras. So for my image of it, that there isn't much religion there, but there is this faith, spirituality, this sort of, that runs through the book, and maybe you can speak a little bit
right.
on that, on the differences, and but also sort of not taking something that seems so important to that culture, and maybe you can say that I'm totally wrong in that assumption.
No, a lot of people have actually, this is something other people have commented on to me,
mm-hmm.
That there isn't a lot of specific religion in the book, which is interesting because religion is equally fascinating to me. Like I love learning about the different cultures and about different beliefs that people have, and it all comes with the same questions, you know, that we have about what happens when we die and what happens to our loved ones and will we see them again, and all of these very real questions that come up during in loss or contemplating your own life. I think it's a natural expression of the way I probably was viewing the world at that time. I am not a specifically religious person, so I framed it in terms of these two characters. And I think it's something that we see a lot in our society. People are not, and I might be generalizing because I live in Los Angeles. I've lived in major cities, so I'm sure the U.S. can be very, you know, different. I don't want to alienate anyone. But most of my friends and most of the people in my age group and people that I know, we are not specifically religious, not a lot of church going and so forth. But well, that's not to say that we're any less spiritual beings and that we don't wonder about these things and that we don't all believe that there is something beyond that we don't know about. I mean, that's just, I think that is just goes without saying, right? That there,
right.
And it goes from all different levels, and it's kind of explored in the book, from things like coincidences or from feeling like you have a connection to someone that has died or you have some kind of supernatural, which is just the word that we use for things that we don't understand. you know, all these things that happen in life, and I believe in those. I also believe in things like the power of consciousness, which the book is a main thing that it's exploring, and you can take it in a very scientific light, like the book does, saying here are these theories, here's specifically how power of consciousness ties into, you know, a mathematical equation, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I also believe it on a bigger level, and I think that things like faith, spirituality, religion, they all tap into that same power of the spirit, for lack of better words, right? Which is which is the spiritual matter, things like faith and prayer and drawing things to us and comforting people. They all come from this kind of otherworldly sense.
Right.
So, yeah,
right.
The book is an exploration of those two things facing off. But for I don't know, I guess I didn't see an exact place for a specific, you know, religious dogma in it.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it struck me that sort of like it's set in a place that is so sort of is so religious, you know, and
mm-hmm.
and Central America is a place that I think of as very religious, and it had these elements of faith, but just not religion. And I thought it was interesting what you said about Los Angeles, how, you know, people in Los Angeles often, even if they are religious, get a bad rap for being not. But are sort of arguably some of the spiritual people, you know, and are sort of seekers in that manner. And I mm-hmm. sort of saw that in, especially in Samantha, but, you know, in all the characters in a way.
Mm-hmm.
The sort of the seeking element of always wanting to sort of figure something out or, you know, truly know something before moving on to the next thing. I mean, even with the sort of French fiancé, she's so sort of between, I mean, she's so
right.
sort of dealing with that, especially when we start the novel, and what it
right.
means and, you know.
Right. Yeah, the characters are very, yeah, I mean, they're very, and deeper, I guess you could say they are. They're dealing with some heavy issues. And but I think that's fascinating. Now you've got me really thinking about this, that there really isn't any clear religious.
I think it's great.
And it's true, Central America has a very, Catholicism, of course, is very strong and very much a part of people's lives. But, yeah, I guess this book was really centered on the characters themselves and on them dealing with friendship and love and like choices and
Well, and I mean the friendship and love and that transcending sort of natural boundaries.
Right.
And that's the, you know, I did find that very interesting, and I found sort of not to harp on it too much, but the aspect, you know, the communication with or the attempt at communication with someone who has died or keeping that sort of connection, which is an ongoing theme. And in a way, you know, the sort of Central America version of Catholicism is very much so a part of that as well. You know, the candles and the saints and sort of people being able to connect with people past that threshold.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a lot of the same elements if you think about it. I mean, because it's a lot of ritual in the book, and they have, you know, they've formed these traditions. There's a lot of the same themes that would run through a more religious. And of course, we see that Garifunas, which is the indigenous population along the coast in Honduras, so they kind of interact with them, and you know, there's a hint of different spiritual values, but.
Right.
But yeah, I guess this was a different kind of exploration to try and weave in the physics. And, yeah, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so the last thing, because we're almost done here, but the last thing I sort of did want to bring up, which was the nature of the grief, and we sort of touched on this in the beginning, but the one thing that really struck me was the French fiancé about the grief. And this sort of irrational thing that Samantha goes through, where she is so overwhelmed with grief that she doesn't quite know how to live her life. And I thought that was a very interesting theme, especially for someone who is young and loses someone so close. That this is a grief that, first of all, people that young, I don't think necessarily experience that often. You know, I mean, even when you're that young, you know, odds are you probably, maybe you've lost a grandparent, but you probably haven't lost a parent. You probably haven't lost a very good friend. So, you know, sort of that first touch with true loss, and how that affects her. And I mean, I don't think it necessarily affects anyone any differently if they've felt it multiple times. But sort of that very, I'm having a hard time phrasing this in words, but that very, you know, that very sort of, I guess,
well, I think
primal.
I think we see Samantha very, paralyzed at the beginning of the book. And it's a theme that ties in also to that age in general, you know, where you're having to grow up and you're having to kind of, you're at a crossroads. So then for her to be dealing on top of that with something that very much feels like the end of the world, she's just kind of stuck.
And in a way, it sort of is the end of the world, a certain part of her world.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I very much so, and I think that we experience that, and like it's something people can relate to, because we've all, whether it's a breakup, which is obviously not comparable, but there are all these kinds of loss and things that will stop us in our tracks in life, and then it takes the courage, right, to move forward and to deal with that kind of change and pain. But yeah, that's definitely a way of putting it, and it's interesting to see the characters react differently, right? Because Samantha is absolutely opposed to the idea of the vacation in the beginning of the book, and feels it's kind of it's sacrilegious. After all that talk about religion, sacrilegious to the friendship of memory of Nina. And then you see the parents, who maybe have a little more perspective or what have you, are saying, no, you know, life moves on, and this is how you do it, like one day at a time, and you make new memories, and you laugh again, and you learn to love again. So that's a theme that we see in the book. It's like, and the parents are not perfect either. They've had these horrible things that in some ways, look at Arshan, look at Jesse. The parents have been stagnated and stopped in other ways in their life. So I guess that's a thing they're all dealing with in their own way.
Right. I mean, you know, I thought that was interesting, sort of the way that they all go through the grief differently and all sort of are at different stages in their grief. But unfortunately, it's going to have to be left for the next podcast. I'd like to say thank you to Deborah for being on. The book is available at pretty much any major bookstore, Amazon.com, IndieBound.org, if you shop indie and local, which you should. Until next time. Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you.
All right.